author of the week?
Well, when you're actually looking at alternative history, you could certainly do far worse than explore the latest alternative history epic by, indeed, our author of the week today. It's entitled Between the Helpless and the Darkness, and it focuses on King Harald Hardrada of Norway, king of the Vikings, a man who was born to rule, embracing that birthright, dominating his world. I just have to say, Brent Olsen, welcome to the Midweek Drive's Author of the Week. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. I mean, I'm suspecting that because of the surname, there is a little bit of the Norwegian / Viking in your history, or is that way off base?
No. I'm half Norwegian and half Welsh.
So you've really got lyricism coupled with, obviously, Viking blood as well from that point of view, which is excellent from that point of view.
Well, that's generous of you to say, but I appreciate that, yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the text itself. I mean, some fantastic reviews in terms of this, and also that whole notion of how would our world be different if the Vikings had settled in the New World and formed a mutually beneficial alliance with First Nation peoples? I mean, I raise that question initially because we've been joined, of course, by Jessica Burtis, who's in North Carolina. So she might have had to completely revision the whole system, etc. And obviously, Anna Coscadel, who's over in the UK from Romania, might also have fascinating questions. But share with us, first and foremost, why you decided to use alternative history as a vehicle for saying, well, maybe if the Vikings, as opposed to Columbus, had actually sorted things through, and then those Mayflower people with the Pilgrim Fathers, etc., we'd have had a much more workable relationship with the Native Americans.
Well, it couldn't have been just any Vikings. It would have needed to be some with some of the greed and ambition burned out of them. And they would have needed to have been forced to have more of a collaborative relationship. And I love the idea of a more matriarchal society having some power, because you may not have noticed, but men tend to screw things up. And I just like the thought of exploring that aspect of it.
Well, again, I have to say some interesting perspectives there. Let's turn straight to Jessica. Jessica, any thoughts from yourself and questions you'd like to put to Brent?
Well, I mean, I have quite a lot, but is it that your family history inspired you to look at Viking history and Norwegian history, or was it just a happy coincidence that you happen to be interested in it?
Probably both. You know, I mean, I read voraciously and I suppose I have more of an interest in Norwegian history because of my background than I would in, say, Bolivian history or Croatian history. But I don't know. That's a good question. I'm afraid I don't have a good answer for you.
That's okay. I'm actually also curious. I think it's interesting that we're talking about your book, because I was actually listening to music earlier today that's like Viking music. Have you ever listened to bands like Heilung that write kind of Viking inspired music?
Yeah, and oddly enough, my wife and I were in the Faroe Islands a couple of years ago, just strolling around Torfshund, and met a guy with his baby. And because my wife can't help herself, she made friends, and it turns out he plays in a band, in a sort of Viking-esque band. And despite my Welsh background, I'm devoid of musical talent, but it's fascinating.
Anna, from the perspective of Romania, clearly the Vikings, I don't think, actually went as far south as Romania. They were probably spending too much time on Lindisfarne and sort of pillaging the northeast coast of England. But any questions for yourself?
Maybe we had some vampire Vikings, who knows? But you may never know. But my question would be, the story begins in York. Do you have a special connection to that city? And, you know, people say that Lincoln resembles York, but on a much smaller case, and it's really a beautiful city. But do you have any connection with York, or is there anything that made you start there?
No, I've never been to Lincoln. My wife and I once drove from Edinburgh to Bristol in a couple of weeks, but we never got to your side. York is mainly because that's where Harold's story starts, or actually ends at the Battle of Stamford Bridge, where he was killed. So that was that. Until I was there, I had no particular connection to it, but once I was there, it's a gorgeous, intriguing part of the country.
And that's what made you choose that place specifically for the story?
Because I liked beginning. I mean, I'm a writer. I'm paid to tell lies, but it was nice to begin with something that was truthful.
I was going to say, Brent, you've been a journalist for over 25 years, so surely I would have thought that the Fourth Estate would have been most concerned if you said, "Journalistic integrity, pa, I'm just telling falsifies."
Yeah, it's an odd segue to go from being scrupulously careful about not saying anything I can't prove to just turning my imagination loose and trying to find something that. What I tell students is that it's perfectly okay when you're writing fiction to lie to your readers, but you can't lie to yourself. Lying to yourself is what makes a bad writer. So you want to write something that makes sense, but the fact that it's made up is part of the fun.
You were a Bush Foundation Fellow in 2012, and also in the past decade, you filed stories from six continents. Is the Antarctic the only one you haven't filed stories from, or is that just one of them?
No, I haven't been able to find someone to pay me to go to Antarctica yet, which is but that certainly would be on the goal.
Again, lots of sort of aspects in terms of your work with respect to obviously the First Board of Directors, Big Stone Wind, Northern Growers LLC, etc. Also, leader of five international work teams for the United Methodist Church. How is it with all of this? How did you find time to write a book? I mean, you've also got three children. You've got obviously a whole range of other sort of bits. Was Annie married for 49 years?
Well, she's a patient woman. Yeah, our 49th anniversary comes up in just a month. And in 1973, I went to her house and she walked down the sidewalk to me wearing a long gray coat. We went off to see the movie Fiddler on the Roof, and I was smitten then. We were married 2 years later, and I haven't wavered from the smittenness of it. But she's a patient woman.
So quite literally, matchmaker, matchmaker, find me a match. Clearly, that was the
Yeah.
case, as opposed
Yep.
to being a rich man. But there we are. That's another line.
I'm
Jessica, back to yourself. Questions, please.
really curious about how you get to know your characters and how you go about combining history with your own imagination.
It's really funny in the book. When I started writing it, there's a character named Stryker who, in the beginning, was supposed to be the bad guy. And I got maybe a third of the way in the manuscript, and I just said to myself, no, Stryker would never do that. So I had to invent, I had to find someone else to be the bad guy. And that is what the best part of writing fiction is, when you reach a point where you surprise yourself. And it just takes a while. I mean, I would guess until the book came out, I maybe spent 20 years either writing or thinking about this. So it took me a while on this one.
It sounds like your characters really just came to life and they're kind of telling you the story of, no, I don't do this.
I think you're absolutely right. They did come to life to me, and I got very invested. And when I had to kill one guy off, I felt really bad. And my editor, when she was going through that chapter, she sent me a letter and she says, "Oh, I really liked you."
Oh.
I'm fascinated, Brent, by this particular factoid about your life, which I had to, well, I did several double takes when I actually read this, which was that you once shot yourself in the hand with a rifle while preparing for a Norwegian, Philippine, French Independence Day celebration.
Well, my wife and I used to have parties. We live in Western Minnesota and we would celebrate Norwegian Independence Day, but that's May 17th and the weather can be a little dicey there. So we had some Filipino friends. So we moved it to Philippine Independence Day, which the weather is usually much nicer. And I have a sister who lived in France for 40 years, and she was going to be here one summer. So we just generously expanded the celebration to her. And how I shot, we would roast hogs. And how I came to shoot myself in the hand with a rifle, it's a longer story than you would
I
want
mean,
to
we're
listen
always
to.
concerned in the UK about obviously the gun law scenario in America, particularly after recent tragic events, which sadly seem to be just so ever ongoing, etc. But I don't think anybody's used as a rationale the fact that it's a Philippine Independence Day.
It was not my finest moment, but it makes a great story. And
I mean, did that lead you on to actually dabbling in six of them of the 10 most dangerous jobs in America? And just out of interest, what were those six most dangerous jobs that you've actually dabbled in?
well, of course, farming is one of them. Farming is second or third on the list. And I've done a certain amount of construction, and I guess I would have to sit and think for a while to come up with the rest. But I'm 69 years old, and I have more curiosity than common sense, and that has led me to that's led me to exploring a lot of different things. And plus, I had three kids to put through college, so I was willing to do almost anything to earn a living.
So, Hollywood stunt person, has that been something you've considered?
There aren't a lot of Hollywood productions in Western Minnesota, so probably not.
Okay, Anna.
Well, I loved everything that you said, but I feel like now it makes sense when you said that your wife is really patient with you. Sounds amazing. But going back to your books and your characters, I was wondering, do you it's you're writing fiction, yeah, but are any of the characters resembling people from your life? Or more exactly, did you write about a character that was actually inspired by your wife or your kids?
I don't think you can separate, fiction. Fiction has to come from a real place. I'm probably not a good enough writer to just start with a completely blank slate on both the computer screen and in my mind. I live where I live is it's far western Minnesota, and Minnesota is in the north and in the middle. I had quite a few Dakota friends growing up. And what I liked discovering is that they're not stereotypes, okay? I mean they're human beings. They're as wonderful and screwed up as any other human being would be. And that's what I wanted to put in the book, is that you are a product of your culture. But your culture is not is maybe not your destiny. You're a good person or a bad person, interesting person or a boring person, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're Welsh or Norwegian or English. It's and that was maybe the biggest thing I wanted to get in the book, is that these are real people and not stereotypes. And so you have to start with real people. And I guess I think that's what I did, and you, because this is a novel, your real people are maybe a little more heroic or a little more cowardly or a little more this or that than the real people you start with. But you have to start with a foundation of something.
You think because of that, you think that's why you form a more special connection with your characters and you tend to put them through actions that end up in a make them end up in a good place rather than end up badly because you started them from someone maybe that you know.
That's a very perceptive question. And the honest answer would be, I don't know. I didn't mind having my main character die heroically because I think that's what he would have wanted to do. And I tried to put in probably as many good endings as I could to support the story. So yeah, you're probably right.
Thank you for answering
I have to say, Brent, you have more extraordinary factoids than probably any or many of the authors that we actually featured on this particular area. I mean, I'm moving on now to another one, which is you have the ability to castrate 30-pound pigs by yourself, taking an average of 40 seconds per pig. Now,
it.
castrating pigs is not something I'd ever considered as a topic on the Midweek Drive, but at the same time, we'll always open this up. So, what possessed you to do that? Was it something you'd always intended to actually say, well, if the journalism thing doesn't work out, I could always castrate pigs?
No, I started as a farmer originally. That's, I live on the farm my great grandparents homesteaded. So I made my living at that for a long time. But the thing I sent you, I really don't have much of an education. I went to a small private college until I ran out of money. Then I went to the University of Minnesota until I got bored. And then when I began writing, I didn't really have a CV that any editor would find intriguing. And I've got my back up about that a little bit. And I decided, it's not like being a surgeon or a mechanic. To be a good writer, you need to be able to write and you need to have something to say. Well, any editor can tell if you can write or not in the first two paragraphs. And so I developed that resume you're reading to show people that I had something to say. And that's the root of it all. And it's actually that's the resume I used to get my first book contract.
Well, the next one will actually lead very neatly into what we refer to as the Jessica Burtis official North Carolina nutrition question, because you said you once actually harvested 235 acres of soybeans in 17.5 hours. That night it actually snowed, and the following morning you actually had 3 cups of coffee before you put on your shoes. Now, it's the nutrition thing, which I think is critical. So, Jessica, from coffee to your own particular North Carolina desert delicacy, do you think this is going to fly in Minnesota?
I think maybe I liked Minnesotan cheese curds, so I think maybe you'll like some of the North Carolina snacks. I don't know. But I would like to know if you have ever tried sweet tea or boiled peanuts before. Not soybeans, maybe point peanuts this time.
I have my wife and I, less than a year ago, we flew into Asheville, North Carolina, just because we'd never been there, and then drove to Charleston.
Oh my
And
goodness, you're naming my favorite places.
and we loved both. We loved both. Asheville is a terrific town, and Charleston also is fantastic. But I'm sorry. I mean, I like sweet tea. Boiled peanuts seem like a brutal trick to play.
Well,
If you don't see them coming, if you think you're just having a peanut and you bite into it,
Yeah,
it's a
there. I try to
sad,
spend.
sad day.
Yeah, it's the consistency of a baked bean or something. But at least we're united on the sweet tea front. I'll have Alex and Anna try it at some point when I can get over to Lincoln if they're willing. But I'm glad that we're united.
I mean, it's the sort of thing, Brent, which adds to this other one, which again I thought was a lovely notion that you have an email from a person who drove 300 miles just to have coffee with you. Why? Because meeting you had been on his bucket list. Can you just expand on that?
Well, and Justin, actually, the man just died. He lived in Michigan, and it was true. He and his wife had a meeting in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is 250 miles south of
You
us.
can't get away from Lincoln. It's the name, from
Exactly.
Abraham
Yeah,
onwards.
yeah,
It's all
yeah.
there.
Anyway, he told his wife. He said, we're over on this side of the country. Maybe we could swing up and see Brent Olson. And so they took a 250-mile detour to get here, and he was a lovely man, and we had a really good time, and we became friends. But you didn't read the rest of the thing there.
Well, I was going to leave it to you to actually sort of reveal any other aspects you'd like, really. I kept a few things back, obviously.
Well, that's interesting. It's something I do to keep my ego in check.
Do you,
Because
I mean,
this
if you wish
man.
me to reveal the fact, I mean, it's fair enough, and I think we've all actually met somebody like this. I can't believe it in the sort of 20 minutes or so we've actually spoken so far to actually have a letter in your filing cabinet that reads in part, I've completely lost all respect for you as an elected official and as a human being. It's something we might write to certain people who are trying to actually play around with a license with a very much beloved radio station. But, really?
Yeah, that was, you see, one of my jobs, which I'm 10 months from leaving, is I'm a county commissioner, which is a very low-level elected official. And there was a woman who was deeply disappointed in something I'd done. And that I thought that was particularly harsh, and as a human being, to not only reject my work, but also me as a person. But I keep the two side by side, because and then if you read them, you need to read them both, and that keeps me kind of in check.
It's the yin and yang. You mentioned you were 69. Obviously, that's very young by comparison to both Biden and Donald Trump. Ever considering actually moving up the educate the ladder of elected officials?
Occasionally, misguided people have mentioned that, but I love where I live. I mean, I have a nice house. We have an orchard. We raise chickens. I've got a greenhouse. I've planted thousands of trees over the years. My children and grandchildren all live close. If I were elected and had to go to St. Paul or Washington, it would ruin my life. And I'm not up to that level of public service, I guess.
Mr. Deeds goes to Washington. Mr. Olson goes to Washington. It could be a whole range of things there.
Maybe, but we're not going to do it.
Fair enough. Anna, any thoughts from yourself?
I think this was one of the best and most interesting interviews we've had up until now. And you do so many different things. I mean, ranging from writing books and saying so many beautiful things about your wife, and then saying that men do more of things that they don't think about, to castrating pigs and doing farming, and then shooting yourself in the hand. It's just all there. And I think we need more than half an hour or an hour. I think we would need a few weeks of interviews just to get every single story from you. So if you could tell us really fast, I don't know, another interesting story of yours where you did something and it is just something unexpected, like this whole interview was.
Something, when people ask me what I did last summer, I say nothing practical, okay? Because as I said, I live on the farm, my great grandparents homesteaded in 1880, and they built a barn, and the barn fell into disrepair. And I could have restored it at one point in time, but I was busy trying to feed my children and pay for their education, so I couldn't afford it. So after a while, there was really nothing left but the cornerstone, and marked that he had carved 1897 into, and I couldn't stand to just leave that. So I built a little stone writer's shack at the end of our farm, where we live next to a lake, which actually is called Olson Lake, because we're the ones who live closest to it. But I built a stone writer's shack with vertical pine siding and a grass roof, and a stained glass window that overlooks the lake, and that's where I do most of my writing now. And there was actually no discernible reason to do any of it, except I wanted to see if I could. And oddly enough, that's how I do most things. I'm wanting to see if I can.
And in the newspaper business, given that I indeed made the error of the misspelling of Olson, have you ever been ribbed because of obviously that fictional character Jimmy Olson and his propensity for taking photographs in the Superman adventure series?
I've never been mistaken for Jimmy Olsen. Back when I used to do actual journalism, you know, I would, if I was, if I was doing a story that wasn't quite important enough for the magazine to send a real photographer, I had a good camera and I would take photographs, and I discovered rapidly that I am not a photographer. I mean, I've worked with real photographers. And they can, I can take a good photo if one presents itself, but I've seen photographers make a good photo by framing it and you know, finding the right light and everything. So I would, I'll never be up to Jimmy Olsen's level, I'm sorry to say.
Well, it's just as well. He's just a fictional character. That's all I can say. In terms of technology, I mean, we're embracing technology to obviously use the to do these interviews and so on, Brent. Do you feel that with respect to ChatGPT, the whole notion of artificial intelligence and so on, is that something that when you look towards the next generation and so on, you're concerned about? Do you feel, well, humanity's always had this challenge, even if we go back to obviously your family's farm, etc. I mean, literally setting up a few years after the American Civil War. Is it a case of, you know, we just have to battle our way through it and all will be well, much as obviously you believe passionately that Henry V's real words at Agincourt were, "Let's get 'em, boys."
It's I don't know, you know, my father died recently. He's 97 years old. The first few years he farmed with horses. The last few years he farmed, he drove a Caterpillar Challenger with a computer and radar in it. So that's a stunning change in one lifetime. And I worry about the chat stuff and the artificial intelligence in terms of writing, because writing to me is so much about heart and soul and blood, sweat, and tears, and investing your deepest self into trying to tell a story as best you can. I guess I'd be deeply disappointed if we reached the point where technology could fill that personal investment. But I think you're right. I think we just muddle on through as best we can.
I was reading an article today in the Hollywood Reporter, actually, which said that Bob Iger, now chief executive officer again of Disney, is desperate to actually get into more explicit gaming industry material. And I was thinking, between the helpless, the darkness, and so and the darkness, could well actually open up in terms of a role-playing game and a game from that point of view. Would you be open to some of those adaptations? Or is it a case of, no, I shall wait for the first Hollywood contract to sign up the movie rights to start off with?
It's kind of funny. I had an agent in New York, a very kind of prestigious agent who shopped my book around to all the major publishing companies, of which there's only about four now in America. And all of them decided my book was a little too quiet. There was no sex and not quite enough violence, and so they were disappointed in that. So,
And yet you have a Korean movie called Past Lives, which is all about a romance over several years that effectively is up for various Academy Awards. Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Go figure. We live in confusing times.
Jessica, any thoughts for yourself?
I'm actually curious. I would want to know if there was, I'm sure there are many, but if there was one Viking fact that you just were super surprised by in doing your research, I would love to know what it is.
I think the wedding ceremony in part consisted of the husband giving the keys of the household to his new wife. I found that really sort of intriguing. And you know, whereas it was still mainly a male-dominated, you know, thing. I mean, Harald Hardrada had two different wives, I think. But I found that really was a big part of the book. It is finding out that that women had a significant level of power, and this was really in pre-Christian, you know, Scandinavia, because once that came in, it became really much more patriarchal and stuff like that. But I was intrigued by that, that women at least in one point in time, and of course now. Two had really quite a bit of power.
Circadian rhythms, the natural rhythms of the day, is one of the reasons I tend to say why I can usually wake up on a particular time, moment, etc. And I also have kind of stepped aside from the wristwatches, but this notion for punctuality that you got, you don't own a wristwatch, but you're always on time. Is it because, Brent, it's because you have that natural sense of when the sun is circling the earth, etc., and you know exactly what time it is?
I kind of do. One of my daughter's favorite stories is we took a trip to the Black Hills of South Dakota, which involves crossing the time zone. And when we got out there, you know, someone said, "Oh, is the time for lunch?" And I said, "No, it's only like 11." And they laughed hysterically because in fact it was 12 because we'd switched time zones. And it took me, I was really befuddled. I mean, it took me like a day before I sort of snapped back into right. And when I travel long distances crossing many time zones, that is the most disconcerting feeling for me, is not knowing what time it is.
Well, we have a few final questions to put to you at this particular stage. One is a musical one. Would you like us to wrap up with Silver Tongue Devil by Kris Kristofferson, or indeed some Pete Seeger, or alternatively, would you like something from Fiddler on the Roof? It's entirely up to yourself.
Ah, oh, those are three great choices. Really, the best line in my resume is the one I'm most proud of is that one of my books was in Pete Seeger's bathroom. Because I got a note from him saying, "I read your good book and I left it in the bathroom for the rest of the family." So, and he was a quintessential American in that he was kind of big-hearted but a little prickly, and did things as he wished without really giving much thought to what the rest of the world thought about what he was doing.
Well,
Pete
I mean,
Seeger, he.
I always like boxes, little boxes, but that's a little too twee, perhaps. What about Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Or is that too depressing? Or is there another Pete Seeger number you like?
Oh no, it's yeah, any of those are good. Any of those are good. It's kind of funny. I like Kris Kristofferson's music. I like his story better. He was a Rhodes Scholar, you know, and he was an army officer, and he volunteered to go to Vietnam to kind of to suffer for his art, but they were going to make him teach English at West Point instead. And so he quit the army and moved to Nashville and became a janitor and a singer. Pete Seeger, I love the way he paid his dues to become a respected figure. Bruce Springsteen, same thing. It's hard for me to like an artist's work without having some level of admiration for the artist themselves. It's hard for me to disassociate the two.
Well, we'll have some Pete Seeger coming up, and then a Tipperary tale with one of our Northern our Irish correspondents, Jenny Finch, will be forthcoming. Now it's time for those last two questions, basically, Brent. Apart from obviously reminding folk that Between the Helpless and the Darkness is available now, presumably on all good platforms, available and published by Kirkhouse Publishers from that point of view. Do you have a website, Brent, that people can actually reach you on as well?
You know, I have a Substack. You see, I have a weekly column called Independently Speaking that's been running for 25 some years. That's on Substack. I'm easy to find there. I have a website called Brent Olson Online where the column shows up, and I also have an Independently Speaking Facebook page where a week after the people who pay for it get my column, I put the column up there, because there's been enough magazines go broke that people who used to read my stuff can't find it anymore. So that's kind of a gift I give the people who've been faithful to me.
Well, we're about to wrap this question, which, as I say, has taken us around a whole variety of interesting topics, with two final questions. First one's going to be asked by Jessica.
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Say that again.
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, has the interview been good for you, Brent? Has it been satisfactory, or was it a case of
It's been
never again? Never
lovely.
put me with
This
a with a with an Irish, Polish, and Romanian and North Carolina person on the same show. It'd be a disaster.
was interesting because I had an interview yesterday where, when we signed on, it became immediately apparent that the interviewer had just opened my bio as we started to talk, and that's sort of painful for everyone. So the fact that you guys have done some research and you had good questions, it was this was fun. This is the most fun I've had in a while. So thank you for that.
Well, that's a tick for the first question. Anna, the second question.
Well, we're happy you liked our interview, and we are wondering if we can have you again anytime soon.
Anytime you want. Anytime you want.
That's great.
Brent Olson, farmer extraordinaire, writer extraordinaire, castrator of pigs, of course. Huge thanks indeed. Take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. Here's some Pete Seeger.
Hey, I got an old song. Maybe some of you might like to help me sing it. I'm going to ask my grandson, Tao Rodriguez, to come up here and help me. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. Where have all the flowers gone? Girls have picked them, everyone.
live version or a live version there of Pete Seeger and Where Have All the Flowers Gone, following, of course, our author of the week. Well, you know, we've got two authors, obviously, for today, because we've got Jenny Finch, ace author, and another time-travelling Tipperary tale.
Hello, and this episode is from autumn 2022. Every Saturday evening, we have a special meal eaten at the table with the nice china. That dates us, doesn't it? And every week we raise a glass and say, what a week that was. Well, yes, once more, this has been very busy and challenging. We are still moving on, moving in fits and starts towards making the house and the garden what we want. These last few weeks, we've been fighting the weather that's been too hot or too stormy. Both of these bring the nasty little biting flies out in numbers. Now August is past, they will diminish, hopefully. We've also been struggling with the insane growth spurts in the wood and the garden, and the strange and just damn awkward plumbing. Most of all, however, we had a very frightening few days with our oldest dog, Chloe. She celebrated her 15th birthday earlier in August, and quite honestly, doesn't look or act her age. The vet says she wants something of what Chloe uses. She looks so young still. We reckon there's a very dusty and raddled portrait hidden somewhere in the house. Last week, however, I woke up as she kicked me and found she was having a seizure. She went rigid, began to shake violently, and her eyes rolled up. I yelled for help, picked her up, stroking and nursing her as she shook more, foamed at the mouth, and after several minutes began to scream in a high-pitched voice. I was terrified. It lasted over 5 minutes, a long time for any dog, let alone one her size at 5.5 kilos and age. The night vet was soothing and gave us good advice over the phone that helped when she had a second fit a few hours later. We took her into the vet the next morning, and they ran tests that were reassuring. Blood's good, nothing on the ultrasound, temperature and heart both normal. She had three more fits, each one shorter than the last, and then nothing. She's been fine ever since, so we wonder if her eternal curiosity led her to sample something alien from the garden. We are keeping a very close watch, but travelling hopefully. Thinking about the garden, we decided to try mowing again, but the old Husqvarna refused to start once again. We'd run out of patience waiting for the promised spare parts, visits to check it over, and other non-delivered mower services. The grass was up over the dogs' heads, the wood was out of control again, and neither of us are up to hand trimming. We looked hard at our bank account, got in the car, and went searching for a mower that actually worked. On the far side of town, we found exactly what we needed. An Irish company called Simplicity make lighter, lower, and yes, simpler mowers. This one drives with individual levers, not a steering wheel. It mulches the cuttings and it is so much fun. We've already cut the lawn and part of the path in the wood. I managed to ground it on a hidden rock, but we got it free again. As the ground is very rough and neglected, I need to go out and mark obstacles before we go any further in. The mower moves well on the lawn and slightly bumpy ground, but will be a bit jerky on rougher terrain. So we're moving in fits and starts until we get it smoothed out and under control, I think. Once the mowing problem was solved, we turned our attention to the bathroom. We purchased a new unit with lovely big basin months ago, but only now feel strong enough to tackle the fitting. The first job was getting the old basin out and capping off the water lines. We had a constant leak, despite all my efforts, until our joiner, Dom, showed me the penny valves. These are tiny screws set in a joint. Turn them 90 degrees and presto, no more water. I wish I'd known about them last week. Still, as Jackie says, our problem is simple. We are not plumbers. Neither of us are strangers to hand tools, even, much to the horror of any men around, to power tools of the drill and saw variety. But we're emphatically not plumbers. We do have YouTube, helpful, but as much of our house is old, some of the problems scarcely exist online. We also have a book from my father, How to Fix Almost Everything, from the 1980s, and this is fabulous. We've been working on the basin for a week now. The waste pipe is concreted in, and in the wrong place, of course. The fittings are different and needed 4 visits to different shops to get pipes, elbow joints, a different waste trap, new brass connectors. We may be slow, it may be awkward and downright painful occasionally, but we're slowly turning into hobby plumbers. I think we will probably be hovering around NVQ level 2 by now, or perhaps not. So now I have to go down and do the final fit for the basin. I am really stiff. I'm not looking forward to it. And let me be honest, I'd much rather take the mower out for a spin, maybe tomorrow. And I've almost finished my stash of jigsaws. Well, I've got no excuse then, have I? For those of you wondering about some book news, I'm still waiting for confirmation of Impress's status. There are still some books around if people want them, and I'm exploring options for book 5, A Long Shadow. My collaboration with Jem Cooney, Puppy Brain, has reached the proofreading stage, oh joy, and I expect it will be available for Christmas. I'll post details as soon as I have them. Autumn is very much on its way in here, and there are changes all around. Things are leaving, new things are coming, some welcome and others less so. The past week have seen more and more swifts around the house. They line up on the electricity lines in the evening, all pointing in the same direction. Then after half an hour, they disappear until the next day. On Thursday, the garden was suddenly a dangerous place to be as they swooped low over the grass and dived off the roof, calling and performing elaborate tricks in flight. The bird window was stripped and they all lined up over 2 wires this time. And then on Friday, nothing. Well, a few lonely stragglers that have missed the flight. We will miss them, though I don't think the flies will. Speaking of flies, they have been far fewer this year, although just as eager to bite any exposed patch of skin. Most of the hatching sites were cleared out last autumn, with one exception. We don't use the upstairs bathroom a lot, and I noticed a large number of dead flies on the floor this week. Eager to clean up, I opened the top window and was mobbed. A very unpleasant new something had arrived and set up home around the frame and tiles, and possibly in the roof space too. There were so many I resorted to filling the room with fly spray and slamming the door. Then I went outside to check if there was a dead body hanging from the chimney. There wasn't. The wise survivors are leaving the premises. The new, young and foolish are still coming. But they are fighting a losing battle. The new mower is a joy, and we are able to cut the grass again. Twice in a month, yay! I say grass, though being in Ireland, there are clumps of moss scattered throughout. Still, it stays green, so who cares? We are also going to do a bit of the path in the wood and drove it round to the gate. Imagine our surprise to find several huge patches of wild mushrooms growing in the chippings from the Leylandii trees. Knowing very little about wild fungi, we took several photographs and got an expert opinion before trying them. They don't seem to last very long, a week, and they're turning black and melting away. Not awfully appetizing. The wood never fails to amaze us. The path remains uncut, as when we drove in, we spotted several tiny frogs scrambling away. They are a lovely bright green colour with a black stripe, and I reckon if we saw 2 as we entered the wood, It's probably full of them. I've also seen a couple of brown newts too, one in the garden, which is a long way from the wreckage of our pond. That, by the way, is a project for the next few years. We hope Fergus will bring his digger, clear out the debris, and help us plant up a decent ecosystem. There is some rising, water rising from the ground, and some seeping in from the old peat workings over the road, as well as the inevitable rain to fill it. And the first of the storms has already passed. An amazing evening sky led to a night of heavy rain and high winds. This one was called Danielle. Who thinks of these stupid names? Now, things leaving or lost. Well, my excellent old Brother Brick laser printer suddenly refused to feed any paper. I ordered a new roller at a shocking price, but to no avail. I now have another equally brick-like printer and a trip planned to the dump to dispose of the old one. I'm sad to see it go, not least as I've just installed a new print drum. I'm still running an old computer whilst trying to find a decent replacement PC I can actually use. I will not use Windows 10, a monster that seems to take control of everything. So I'm seeking something with Windows 7. I'm still using a 20-year-old version of Word as I can't cope with the newer We Will Do Everything version. As I hope to get back to some serious writing this winter, I need something I know and trust. And finally, we come to the writing. What can I say? Avoiding libelous statements, the publisher has called in the administrators and everything is now frozen. This is actually a good thing, as Company House has just given 2 months' notice to force the winding up. If they go ahead first, then all assets become property of the Crown, and books are considered assets. I was in despair when I read this. 12 years' work seized and sold on without my consent. Yes, it is legal, though it doesn't seem particularly just or moral. The administration should go ahead first, however, next Friday, we are told. The moment it is official, all books and rights revert to us, the authors. All we need is the official documentation to prove our ownership. A dozen or more of us are keeping our fingers crossed. I have a new Alex Hastings book ready to go. It's been ready for 2 years, waiting for publication. And half of a sixth novel too, though I've been too despondent to look at it recently. On the bright side, my collaboration with Jem Cooney is in its main proofreading stage and looks good to go for Christmas. So here's to Puppy Brain and a good outcome on Friday. I will post a quick update if I have any news from the administration meeting. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you will join me again soon.
But you can't possibly leave our listener on the horns of a cleft stick there, because we know you're writing this, obviously, retrospectively from those diary dates at the end of the year. We need to know flies, mushrooms, Windows 10. What about the situation with Impress Books and going into receivership? Have you got authorial rights back?
I have got everything back. I can't officially sell the books because they've got Impress printed over the back, though I did manage to save a large number from being pulped, which would have been a desperately heartbreaking moment. But I have the right to republish them, to reissue them. And of course, I've got the film rights and the television rights, which means that the work with John in maybe getting someone to do a television series of Elverman can go ahead. And I have got the Kindles as well, and the right to publish the Kindles under my own name. So I may well go ahead with that when I can afford it.
Well, that's clearly cheered up our North Carolina correspondent, Jessica Burtis. Jessica, any questions or aspects you'd like to put to Jenny, such as how can we persuade her to actually move to Windows 10, if ever?
No, I don't understand anything about Windows, to be honest. It's a mystery. So yeah, Windows 10, I can't help you there, unfortunately. But I'm actually curious with the garden now that we're getting closer towards spring. I know it's still kind of chilly in Ireland, but do you have plans now going forward that we're going to be transitioning into March and April and 2024 is going to be over?
Oh, we have. Tomorrow, a man is coming with a digger to clear out the middle bit of the wood, and we're going to plant a centerpiece of flowers of trees that give color, like a Canadian maple and a cherry tree and a rowan and a copper beech. So we'll have that, and then we'll be able to run the mower around it. And the piece at the back that's been a wreck ever since we moved in. We have a man coming in 2 weeks' time who will be clearing that off, and he will collect fruit trees for us and replant a small orchard of apple tree, a couple of apple trees, Victoria plum, crab apple for the birds, a few nut trees. There was an orchard there, and it was just twigs when we got here. And so, yes, we are finally getting to a point where we can do that, and it's a lovely feeling.
I'm so excited for you, and I cannot wait to hear about the apple harvest this autumn that's going to be happening because I expect photos.
Well, you can always come along and sample them if you wish. We have a very nice spare room.
I would love to.
Anyway, Jenny, once again, many thanks. And hopefully, it won't be too long before we'll be traipsing down the Tipperary Tail once again.
Thank you, Alex. Take care now.